This is why we love racing in all its forms.
And it's Lock and Varats, Pride's Easy Feed Victoria Cup.
Brodsky beat Clear, All Outfit wins the Sandown Cup.
Twilight Pavement, what a ride, what a win in a cup we'll never forget.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
That's what we're doing, and we're going to be cracking the codes whilst jumping into a time machine and taking ourselves way, way back in time. What am I talking about? I'll find out in the next half hour or so, I guess. Morning, Simone and Daniel.
Morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Dan.
Oh, Dan's up and about. Morning, Daniel.
Yes. I've tried to put my early morning voice on. It's a bit hard to get it right so early in the morning, but it's... Hasn't the weather been fantastic, guys? I love this time of the year. We can get the warm days and the crisp nights, and it suits me to a T. And I used to think that Good Friday, it was my favourite day of the year. There was one good reason why it was the most favourite day of the year, because there was no racing. But that's sort of changing now, isn't it? While there's limited racing on there, there's some attraction to it, but I must admit, it's got to stop. This roulette wheel, it's getting to the stage now where you don't even get to see the white ball drop.
No, that's right. That's right. I remember back in the olden days, Simone, when I used to cover the Sydney Autumn Carnivals, and I used to be up there in this period, and there's nothing more desolate in the world than the Sydney CBD back then, before Good Friday sort of opened up a bit more, when... You're walking around with another interstate journo on the Friday trying to find something to do in Sydney when there wasn't even a public bar open. You know, it was, you basically, all you could do is raid your minibar and watch stuff on some of those pay-per-view channels on the hotel TV.
Well, that's not such a bad thing, is it? Sometimes you, when you're forced to take a break and you have to just chill out, well, you should take the opportunity. But unfortunately, in racing, and I know everyone who's got dogs and horses will relate to this, when you've got them, Good Friday is just still another day where you get up and you might not be racing, so you might have a night or a day off from that. But, you know, you've still got to get up and work the animals in the morning and feed them and do them throughout the day. And one thing that, in the nearly 30 years, I suppose, that I've been doing the greyhounds is I've never had a day off at home. And that sounds really odd, but there's always, when you're at home, you're not going to pay someone to be here doing the job for you. So it's one of those things, you get time off during the day, but it's not like you say, right, I'm just having a complete day off today. Everyone else is, it's a public holiday. And it would be
Darren,
nice to have...
Darren won't even give you one day in 365.
Well, it's not fair to send him out there to do it when I'm... You know,
you've got about $40
nothing.
Or more, haven't you?
Yeah, so up around 35.
We need to have a chat to Darren.
It's just one
Daniel.
Of those, but it's one of those things. I'm sure everyone who's got animals that need to be worked on a public holiday, it's not like a sacred day where it's a complete day off. You've still got to get out and do something. So I'm not really having a whinge, but I'm just
sounds like it.
Stating a fact.
So we'll have a chat to Darren, because look, you've been a wonderful partner and mother and help everything, and he won't even give you one day in 365. Hey, listen,
I'm sure he'll be saying that that's my version of events.
Wow. So what you could do, Simone, because of the theme of the morning, is you could actually escape all this by taking yourself back in time and meet someone else. So the reason why we're doing this is because something happened earlier in the week, and you know those little things that spark a little thread. So saw a photo of a foal on social media a few days ago, and it was Secretariat as a foal, and the story was Secretariat was born on this day in 1970. So then we started talking about the famous Belmont Stakes in June 1973, where he won by 31 lengths, and I remember watching a doco on it where Jack Nicklaus watched it at home alone on his couch in Florida and burst into tears and said, that's the greatest sporting moment of all time. So then we started extrapolating on this theme and did a story on it, and then we started talking about it on radio and getting a lot of callers back to talk about, and then even over dinner the other night, that's all we were talking about was, if you could, what would it be? And Dan, things came up like the rumble in the jungle, Adam Scott tapping in as it got dark at Augusta to win, a few famous soccer games in the UK, FA Cups, a few racing ones and so on. And just off the top of your heads, what's the first thing that you would teleport yourself back to, Dan, if you could?
I was born the year that man first walked on the moon. It was the same year you were born as well, Matt. You were born a little bit earlier on in that year. So that
would
be interesting.
That's another penalty for you for mentioning that.
But I, you know, having grown up loving horses, and look, I started young enough that I can remember them, and history is a great thing, so we can learn from. But one that is at the top of my list, and this love, I guess, love affair with this horse grew as I got older because I didn't know enough about him, and that's the great Australian jumper, Crisp. And what he did in Australia and what he did in defeat, and, you know, you're talking about the Rumble and the Jungle, I would still consider the best race that I've ever seen. And I never saw it live. I was too young. I wouldn't have even been four by the time the Grand National of 1973 was run. But in time, it would prove to be certainly the greatest Grand National that was ever run and the greatest race. And I've heard from many people in the UK to say that they believe it is the greatest race that they've ever had. And whenever anyone down under mentions it, it sort of makes them proud. But we had that Australian representation and the horse Crisp. And it wasn't as if he was on level weights. He was carrying the grandstand as he did it at his 11 jumps wins in Australia. And, you know, his last jumps win here, he won the Hiskins, his second Hiskins steeple at Moonee Valley. He won by half the straight. He carried 76.5 kilos, winning by 20-plus lengths. And that day that he won that race, he broke the track record by more than 10 seconds. And even in the Grand National, the year that he got rolled, he was giving, more than, the equivalent of about 9 kilos to Red Rum, who would prove to be the greatest staying chaser that the UK has ever seen. In that race, the Grand National of 1973, they smashed the track record, which had stood for nearly 40 years, by 18.3 seconds. I mean, this is just unbelievable. And he was carrying such a big weight and to get run down. So I would say Crisp is one horse among many. It was a great era because there was the champion sprint of Vane. And they were, even though I was alive when they won, naturally I couldn't remember it, Vane and Crisp were just, they almost go down as mythological creatures, and there's a bit of a theme to that throughout today's show.
Absolutely. And we'll revisit Crisp and Vane. But Simone, just the same question to you, if you could, on-the-spot question, if you could jump in my time machine, the TARDIS, let's call it, and go anywhere. It doesn't have to, it could be, imagine you'll gravitate to a greyhound, but there might be something else as well. So we'll give you even two goes, if you like, a greyhound one and a non-greyhound one.
Well, I'd have to say, as a horse one, it would definitely be Farlap in the 1930 Melbourne Cup. Farlap's been that horse that, I grew up in a non-racing family. Parents aren't interested. Well, Mum is a little bit with the greyhounds, but Dad not interested in racing. Rarely ever went, and if it was, it was with family, cousins perhaps. But Farlap was that horse as a horse lover that his name popped up all the time and people spoke about him. So definitely Farlap. I love the movie. He started my, my interest in taxidermy when I visited him at the Melbourne Museum back when I was about
8 years
old.
Where this ghoulish part of your life began, and it was with Farlap. Yeah.
Farlap. So he was the one that ignited that whole interest in taxidermy and that fascination. So, and I have been back to visit him since a couple of years ago. Farlap definitely.
So we look at Farlap and think, what a beautiful animal behind his glass, and you think, oh, I'd like to skin that. Is that the way you think?
No, not at all. It was because I didn't have a horse of my own, and he was a horse in the museum, and he was just so magnificent and so tall, and it was that fascination. How did they actually, you can't see where they've, done their job and how well it's been done. So it was just that fascination. So definitely Farlap. I'd love to go back and just experience the atmosphere, just the crowd, and he was that horse that gave people hope, didn't he? He was the battler trainer, and Farlap was that horse that just ignited everyone's interest and gave them something to look forward to. So him, but also on a greyhound front, Bold Trees, who has raced in my lifetime, but his fourth win in the Sandown Cup, I think that would have been probably the most special because it's something that I could confidently say we will never, ever see again. So to be on track that night where he took out his fourth Sandown Cup, I think that would be something quite remarkable and magical.
All right, and we've got a cavalcade of replays here which can steer us through and help light this up a bit as well. And one I don't think we've got, Craigie, but we did have earlier in the week was Secretariat's Belmont Stakes win. I don't know if it's on standby or anything, but it was just off the cuff there. But we don't have to. But mine would be Secretariat because I became obsessed with Penny Chenery was the owner, and she was this amazing figure through women's lib in the 1970s because she was the female owner of the Champion Colt, and there was something a bit counterbalancy about that because it hadn't really occurred before. There were all these big Texans and Kentucky, you know, horse owners and things like this, and this very attractive and very media-friendly woman, Penny Chenery, came along who'd bred it and saved the family farm and all that sort of stuff, and then she created Secretariat. And Belmont Stakes in 1973, he'd won the two legs of the Triple Crown. There were 69,000 people there. Secretariat had bumped the famous sports stars off Sports Illustrated and Time magazine. So he was the most famous athlete in the United States when the United States still had an affection for particularly the Triple Crown. I just want to just have a listen to this little burst of Secretariat. And this is where I wanted to be there this day.
Secretariat is widening now. He is moving like a tremendous machine. Secretariat by 12. Secretariat by 14 lengths on the turn. Sam is dropping back. It looks like they'll catch him today as Mike Allen and Vice of Prince are both coming up to him now. But Secretariat is all alone. He's out there almost a 16th of a mile away from the rest of the horses. Secretariat is in a position that is impossible to catch. He's into the stretch. Secretariat leads his field by 18 lengths. And now Price of Prince is taken second, and Mike Gallant has moved back to third. They're in the stretch. Secretariat has opened a 22-length lead. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner. Here comes Secretariat to the wire. An unbelievable, an amazing performance. He hits the finish 25 lengths in front. It's going to be Price of Prince second, Mike Gallant third.
Other than the bit where the race caller says he's moving like a magnificent machine, the bit I like is when he turned for home, Dan, he goes, he's all alone. He's all alone, yeah. Secretariat. So I think that, and when you see him colorized, he was just a beast. He was a big red beast. So anyway, well, let's wander down the path. Simone, you can bounce the ball. We've got some lovely replays here that Dan's cobbled together. So why don't you tell us which one interests you most and we'll have a listen and we'll talk about it.
Well, how about we start off with Farlap, because he's one that everyone can relate to. I couldn't actually get proper audio of his Melbourne Cup win other than off the movie, which was a little bit more theatrical. But we do have a little clip of Jim Pike after the Melbourne Cup.
He's a great horse. In fact, he's the best horse Australia's ever seen, and I doubt if ever they'll see his equal. There's only one chance they've got of beating him, if they can breed him with wings on and get Kingsford Smith to ride him, and then I doubt whether they'll beat him then.
And even the reference to Kingsford Smith to take this, Dan, to remind us what else was happening in Australia at the time, and Kingsford Smith was doing all these amazing things in the air.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? And that's the sort of quote. I hadn't heard that quote before, and it's great when we're able to do a little bit of the research. And, you know, I've had a couple of late nights this week as a result of not just trying to find something for my work, but something that really satisfies my thirst, both for knowledge and also the history involved in the reasons why we love this game so much. And that was after he won the 1930 Melbourne Cup, Farlap, and a pretty cocky Jim Pike. He virtually said he was unbeatable. He was invincible.
What did he say? Make him with wings or something. That's the only way they could beat him.
If he could breed him with wings.
And get Kingsford Fliff to be the jockey. Hey, all right, Dan, why don't we throw one of yours in now? What's there's one that I think you and I will both agree on involving a mega star of the late 90s at Harold Park. But what's the first one that you want to gravitate to?
Well, I've got a few here, and there's a couple of harness horses and a couple of thoroughbreds. I reckon we'll start off with this because I cannot believe I've never seen this before, never heard it before. I mentioned how difficult it is to find audio and visual references to a lot of great horses, and I found one of the Champion Crisp. This magnificent horse who won 11 races in Victoria over jumps, 9 races in the UK, 9 races. In the first season that he went to the UK. Of course, he was owned by Sir Chester Manifold, who was, I think he was the first chairman of the TAB, Matt. And, of course, the first system that the TAB had was the Crisp betting system, obviously named after this great horse. But amongst his victories is this one. He won the Champion Chase. I think it's known as the Queen Mother Chase now at Cheltenham. And we found the vision, but in this case, what's more applicable is the audio of the great horse Crisp winning in the UK.
Home turn now and levelling up to the final fence in the National Hunt 2 mile Champion Chase. And what a horse this Australian horse is, Crisp. He's coming to the final fence now after this blistering gallop, looking fresh as could be, with Paul Kellaway sitting up where he hopes to be sitting at the end of the Champion Hurdle and the Gold Cup. And Crisp having a jab, and he jumps it cleanly and beautifully, and he's getting a great reception. This is a fine performance, this. New Romney jumps it second, Basket jumps it third, Royal Relief just coming to jump it fourth, and running up towards the line, here's Crisp striding away with the National Hunt 2 mile Champion Chase. New Romney chasing him home now in vain, and it's going to be a near thing for third place, with possibly Royal Relief going to get up and relegate Basket. It's going to be a close thing for third, no doubt about the winner. It's Crisp. Second is New Romney. Here comes a very close thing for third place between Royal Relief and Basket.
You know what I noticed? You know what I noticed, Dan? The polite applause rather than, you know, we go, did you hear the, just the polite clapping like they're at the theatre?
Oh, he's an Australian.
Yes. Oh, from
the black kangaroo.
From the Antipodes.
You know,
yeah,
after
how different the race callers are too. They're tones to the American, to the English. The English are very polite, aren't they? And the Americans are very, I don't even know what the word is, but I don't know.
Almost extroverted in the way that they go about their calling. Some of them are.
But they have improved, I think, Dan, haven't they? Like overseas. Like, remember when the Australians were just the du jour. They were the number one race callers, and then
the Crispus, they were.
Well, that's right. But then, but now I think we've raised the bar because of the excellence of our race callers. I think they've realised that there was a Chris Bassani, an old mate, and I used to have this because he used to imitate English race callers, and they quicken at the mile and go on. That was the that was our little catchphrase. Well, quicken at the mile and go on.
The 73 Grand National, Sir Peter O'Sullivan's call, is etched in the memory of anyone that can remember that race. And we might even have that next week, I reckon, and have a bit of a reference to the great horse Red Run. But Crisp won the Cup Steeplechase the day that Rainlover won his second at Melbourne Cup. What an amazing horse. You know, he, after that famous 1973 Grand National, about 8 weeks later, there was what turned out to be a rematch. There was a number of horses entered for a race. It was at Doncaster, and everything else scratched and left two horses in the race. It turned out to be a match race between Crisp and Red Rum. I'd never heard of this before, guys.
Never heard of it.
And
who
it
won
was
that
on
one?
Equal weights. Equal weights. Who wins?
Hopefully Crisp.
Yeah, easily by 10 lengths.
Well, why don't we talk about that? Because that's the square off for Aintree, isn't it? Like, historically, why don't we talk about that? Because that sorted it, didn't it? It did to me. 10 lengths better than Red Rum. I'll cop that.
Well, Red Rum got 9 kilos from him, or the equivalent of 9 kilos when he beat him. And, of course, then Red Rum would go on and win the following year, the Grand National, then a second, and then won it again the fifth time. And he was going to run favourite the sixth year and got scratched on the morning of the race.
I interviewed Richard Pittman about 10 years ago. He was out in Australia, and he said it was my fault. He said it was my fault that that Crisp got beaten. He said I yanked him around that little dog leg and went for the whip, and he said that knocked the last bit of stuffing out of him, and he said it was all my fault that Crisp got rolled. And I said, yeah, you're probably right.
But he was a horse they wouldn't try beyond 2 miles in Australia. They wouldn't run him in a national here because 4,800 or 5,000 was too far, and he ends up running, you know, one of the greatest races, certainly in defeat, and creating one of the greatest races over 7,200. Okay, what about this?
Yes.
Do you want me to go again while
go
we're
again.
On the thoroughbred?
Go
front?
Again, go again.
What about this great horse, Vane? 14 starts, 12 wins, Golden Slipper winner, unbeaten at 2. The horse that did eclipse him was Daryl's Joy in the Moonee Valley Stakes. As an odds-on favourite, Vane got beaten at the mile, but then Daryl's Joy goes on to win the Cox Plate and the Victoria Derby, so that form was more than franked. I picked up this little clip about the great horse. He was sort of a flash. He wasn't around for a long time, but he certainly made the 1969 spring his own.
But it was during the 1969 Melbourne Cup Carnival that Vane sealed his greatness. In the space of just 7 days, he won 3 feature events, the first of which was the Craven A Stakes.
The performance of the crowd is out. 8 lengths in front of Dollar's Double of Our Faith, and how about this for a machine? And he's got 20,000 for that. Vane went on to win by 10 lengths.
Vane's winning margin of 12 lengths is the biggest ever recorded in a major handicap. On Oaks Day, Vane smashed the course record for 7 furlongs at Flemington in winning the Wait for Age Linlithgow Stakes, beating the class racehorse Black Onyx by 6 lengths. Vane completed his Cup Carnival assault in the George Adams handicap over a mile, carrying 10 pounds more than Wait for Age. Unfortunately, it was to be Vane's last race, as he suffered a leg injury while preparing for a return to racing the following autumn.
I'd never seen a horse win with the ease that he used to win with, you know, and he's only got beaten the twice out of 14 starts, so I think that I don't like comparing him with other fellas' horses because you don't want to make enemies over things like that, but he was a pretty special horse, very special.
Jim Maloney there, the trainer of Vane, of course, Pat Hyland. They had that incredible association, but he turned out to be a champion sire as well. A couple of Golden Slipper winners and Inspired and Sir Dapper, and he was just a freak. And like a lot of them that come along, they don't last a long time on the racetrack, guys.
No, he was a sausage dog too. He was really, really long. So was Todman, and so was Mel Destro. Maybe they've all got something in common. Length.
All winners as well, so there you go.
Now, Simone, yes. There are some massive mythical beast names, and you'd love to have gone back in time. What's one that jumps out at you in the greyhound world?
So, like I mentioned earlier, Bold Trees, definitely. I love stayers. I love staying races. I find them, they're just so exciting. They go that little bit longer, so you get a little bit more to watch, I guess, but so much more can happen. I mean, obviously with sprinters, some that just jump to the front and win, but with the stayers, really love watching the greyhounds come from well back in the field, and Bold Trees epitomised the come from behind wins. And his fourth Sandown Cup, like I mentioned earlier, I think that would have been, even if it wasn't his best win, I think it would have been his greatest win, in the sense that it was never going to be emulated by any other greyhound, and it really sealed that this was history that will never ever be repeated. So how about we go back in time to Bold Trees winning his fourth Sandown Cup.
Bold Trees has produced some remarkable performances in his career, but last night was one of the biggest runs you could see on a racetrack. Carrying the red rug, Bold Trees settled last and was still at the tail of the field midway down the back straight. But the might of this phenomenal stayer prevailed, unleashing a whirlwind finish to win his fourth Sandown Cup.
It's great action in front, the pick about 2 lengths clear. Bold Trees is starting to fly down the outside, and he's got it! 4 in a row! He's a champ! Bold Trees has got it!
A greyhound's racing days are much shorter than a horse, so Bold Trees' 4 wins are quite an achievement. He's now set a record that will probably never be broken anywhere in the world.
Now, it'd have to be nearly his best win tonight, seeing his 5-year-old and stood him up that far. They're all been good, but this would have to be as good.
And that was a very familiar voice reporting there, wasn't it?
It was a young Malecki, wasn't it?
Yeah, he went the early crow, saying this might never be repeated. And, Dan, you're safe at the moment. There's nothing else that has repeated that in history yet. But
it would take some doing. Imagine a dog out there with walking sticks and a frame to get around there to do it 4 years in a row.
Yeah, certainly would. Yeah. But, Matt, you've got a terrific one as well that you'd like to go back in time to, and perhaps not what some people may be expecting.
Yeah, I remember going, you know how, Dan, how every harness horse always seems to be trained around Melton, Romsey or Lancefield. And I remember going to whoever the stable was where Christian Cullen was visiting. That's where he stayed when he was in Victoria. It was out that way somewhere, I remember.
Yeah, he stayed. I reckon he stayed at the Dyer's property.
Right.
And there was another time he stayed at Ange and Ray Pace's place. So right. He made a couple of visits. But, yeah, still around that Golden Triangle area.
Yes, the Golden Triangle. And I remember going to watch him work one morning, and to see him up close, yeah, really close, as he whizzed past, I don't think there's ever been a racing animal that had the action that Christian Cullen had. It was like his legs were pistons. It was like poetry and like industrial at the same time, the way he worked. And then I just loved watching him race because of his action and the way he went about it. And that 1998 Miracle Mile, there's a really good package actually on YouTube about the whole evening and the build-up and the crowd and everyone coming to see Heracles and Christian Cullen and now Sir Vancelot and TaylorMade Lombo. But in the end, and it was it Brian O'Meara, the trainer, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He was interviewed before the race and they said, oh, do you think you'll lead? He goes, yeah, I think we'll lead. And they said, oh, do you think you'll win? He goes, yeah, I think we'll win. So this is Christian Cullen winning he smashed it in the 1998 Miracle Mile.
Christian Cullen at the 500. He's full of running, 5 metres in front. Second is Franco Lotsmore, TaylorMade Lombo battling. Our Sir Vancelot starts to run on, but Christian Cullen, 5, 6 metres in front, went through the third in 28.3, and Danny Campbell let him down. Christian Cullen, 10 metres, Franco Lotsmore, TaylorMade Lombo. Then our Sir Vancelot, Franco Hattrick, held up, looks a place chance. Heracles dropped out, but it's all Christian Cullen. He's 10 metres in front of TaylorMade Lombo. Then our Sir Vancelot, he's done it there, now he's done it here. Hail the new Australasian champion, Christian Cullen. He won the Miracle Mile by 20 metres in a time of 1:54.4. Second TaylorMade Lombo.
Funny about times, isn't it? Because at the time it was a total smash-up time, but by today's standards, but I don't think that's quite relevant for his era. He was
smaller track too, smaller track, Harold Park.
Yeah, absolutely. So
31 starts, 22 wins.
Yes, megastar. And I still remember the Hunter Cup Simone where he galloped once and recovered and looked like he was going to win, and then he galloped again, and that was the end of it. So he was my perfect animal.
Well, Matt, you were talking about his style of racing, and he was beautiful to watch. He had, you know, when you watch the Kenyan runners, the marathon runners, or even the sprinters against the Australians, the English, the rest of the world, there's something about their style. They've got their limbs, the way
effortless,
that they run.
It's just easy, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It looks easy. And that's what I look at when I look at Christian Cullen. And then after the finishing line, you know, he's got his ears flat back against his neck. He just, you can tell he thrives on it. But his motion is just so beautiful to watch. And perhaps that he was just so efficient in his races as well. And that's what gave him the edge at the time.
And a very successful sire, as he turned out to be. The other horse that, you know, we want to teleport, I remember well and saw him race many, many times. But like you'd pointed out before, Simone, just because we haven't seen him, it depends on what age you are. Did you really appreciate him at the right time or her? And it's Popular Arm. And what he did at the time, I don't know if there was a bigger megastar. I mean, you only have to look to news services, what journalists thought of him. He'd be the front page news if he pulled up Sora track work in the newspaper. You know, say the Herald Sun, Matt, or news services on all of the free-to-air channels. When he broke his leg, for example, it was the lead story in every news bulletin. And there'd be an update a few months later. How's his progress going? Mm. It'd be in the first segment of the news. Mm. It wouldn't actually be in the sport. And in throughout his career, remember, it was littered with injuries. And he was the other superstar. For me, at a most impressionable age, he was a champion. 49 wins from 62 starts. And I picked out a race that I hadn't heard for a long, long time. It was of the great horse during the... They had a series called the Trans-Tasman Challenge, and they had champion horses from New Zealand versus champion horses from Australia. Anyway, you'll hear some of the other names in the race, but Popular Arm did what he usually did.
But he releases the brakes on Popular Arm coming off the back and slipped an inch more leather. Popular Arm moved away by 2 lengths to Chuapika Star, who's trying very hard. A length and a half then to Delightful Lady, followed further back by Gamelite, then Royal Three and Hands Down, but around the home turn. And here's a true champion in action. There's no doubt who the horse of the hemisphere is. It's Popular Arm. He's careering away. He's 4 lengths in front. Delightful Lady's running on Gamely, then Chuapika Star and Gamelite, but shaken up near home. Popular Arm's going to win it very easily. Popular Arm scores by about 7 metres. Delightful Lady second, a head away third, Chuapika Star, then Gamelite, 4 lengths to Royal Three, and 80 metres away last is Hands Down.
There was a Hall of Fame in the horses that he beat, let alone him, let alone him as part of it. Guys, what a fascinating... I reckon it's one of the great dinner table... You know, when you're sitting around dinner table and you think, oh, what are we going to talk about? I reckon it's a great one to bring up. Where would you take yourself? Whether it's rock concerts, historical events... whatever, sporting, it's such a fascinating thing to wonder about. And after the break on Cracking the Codes, we're going to, Simone, you can just briefly set the scene for where we're going to go and what the theme is going to be when we come back after the break.
Oh, well, we might think about some little animals riding some bigger animals, but I'm not talking about horses and jockeys. I'm talking about greyhounds and monkeys. So that will set a little bit of the theme going forward. We're going to jump in that TARDIS and we're going to go zooming back through time, back to about the 1920s and 30s at White City.
Yeah, looking forward to it. You're listening to Cracking the Codes. We'll take this break and come back with Monkeys on Greyhounds.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
And as we've been talking about, if we were transported back in time, I'm sure there's many, many races that we'd all love to go and see, and ones that we'd like to revisit if we've already been there. And one person who can shed a little bit of light on some history, and he's seen some very, very good greyhounds race. And he also had an uncle who ran the track at North Melbourne, at White City there, where they used to have the monkeys riding the greyhounds, is Terry Reid. So, Terry, good morning, and thanks for joining us on Cracking the Codes.
Good morning, crew. How are you?
Good.
Yeah,
Hey, Terry, can I I'm always fascinated by these, and I don't know how much information you have, but I'll ask anyway, and these amazing racetracks that used to be here that aren't anymore, and Williamstown always fascinated me because that's where Shadow King won about five Williamstown Cups, and they say that the Roar used to go right across Port Phillip Bay when he used to win, and all these other ones like, I think, Aspendale and places like that. Do you know much about White City? Do you know much about exactly where it was and what it was like?
White City was in Tottenham.
Yep.
And my great-uncle used to manage the track, and he even got a railway station put in there, which was called White City Railway Station, and it was there until about 1972 before they closed it down. So there was, look, there's lots of tracks that have closed down, and you talked about Aspendale for the horses. They even try to run a greyhound meeting there with the lure on top of the horse rail, and they had two goes at it, and it never worked. Yeah, so, yeah. But White City was out at Tottenham. Napier Park was where Strathmore High School is. Graysdale Park was where the Springvale Town Hall is. And there was tracks in all the country centres. There was a track at Wonthaggi. Benalla had a track just across the road from the Botanical Gardens there. So there's tracks everywhere, yeah.
So White City, because there's this lovely old man called John Benson who we used to take around when he was in his 90s. He was an old person's home, and he used to tell us he was a pastry chef by trade when he was in his working days, but he used to paint whippets different colours in Richmond and race them and pull off a few rorts back in the 1940s, I think it must have been.
A bit of fine cotton, bold personality, a la canine style.
And he wouldn't need a lot of paint for a whippet either, so you could be like, do it as a budget job. So...
Yep.
But just not necessarily on that, but again, back to White City. What sort of crowds, you know, were they all, did they get there via public transport? How many would they get
there? Yeah, they'd come by train because not many people had cars in those days. So, you know, and at White City, they ran goat races, which are like troughs with the goats pulling the carts and kids driving them. They had foot running and they had whippet races. Now, the whippet races were similar to stall gift. You'd have your whippet down the end in your lane, and you had a friend down the end waving a white towel or a sheet mostly, you know, like something white to get them to run down. So, and they'd just slip them. Yeah, so.
So it was like a country fair type thing, kids with goats, whippets, my old mate John Benson painting them black ones white and the white ones black and all sorts of things. So it would have been an amazing historic experience, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, look, things went on them days that wouldn't go on now, like the monkeys on the dogs. Imagine that now. The animal rights people would be out there with bells on. Yeah. So.
Nobody interviewed the monkeys on the dogs.
That was just an exhibition thing to get people through the gate. And what they'd do, they'd slip them down the straight over the hurdles. Yeah, like they'd have two hurdles in the front straight, and they'd slip them down there, and it was just sort of an exhibition thing, you know. So, but it got people through the gates. So they had big crowds and good turnover. So, you know, because you've got to remember there was no television or anything in them days.
Where'd the monkeys come from?
I think they got them from the circus. Yeah. So they were trained monkeys. And they did the same thing at Wentworth Park too. So it would be a travelling circus that provided them. Yeah, so... Yeah.
Oh, Terry, obviously you're not old enough to have been around when the monkeys were being raced around these tracks, but your family, having grown up since you were born, basically in a greyhound family, and your father, Peter, is in the Hall of Fame, and your brothers train greyhounds, but you remember some of the conversations between your parents, don't you? And that's probably what's giving you all these vivid memories.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. You hear all the stories and that, and how they'd head off on the train to the dogs, and they'd go to Wonthaggi in the back of a furniture van, you know, to race the dogs. So Charlie Hingston would pick them up at a certain point and off they'd go. You know, so it was different days then, you know.
I was talking to a mate of mine, Gary Gray. I had a glass of wine with earlier this week, and we were talking about this theme of today of going back in time to these amazing eras of amazing things happening in sport. And he was telling me about how rich boxing and fighting was back in the day.
Yeah, it was big. Yeah.
Yeah. It was part of the culture, wasn't it? The fights.
Is that Gary Gray from Bellbird?
Yep, yes.
Yeah, you'll love
that.
Actually, he was a friend of my brother-in-law.
Right, And everyone, not everyone was a fighter, but it was very much, what are we going to do tonight? We'll go down to the fights, wasn't it? And is that place in North Melbourne
and
still?
If you had no money, I wonder if I could make myself into a boxer. Like Jim Coleman, the greyhound trainer, he even had a go at boxing. He said he was no good at it. So then
Dan Malecki was a doyen of the master arts, the dark arts.
Yeah.
I was unbeaten.
Zero from zero.
Yeah.
But they were big. I mean, even in America today, some of the biggest harness races are still run at the state fairs. So it sounds quite similarly to the what you were talking about with the entertainment that was provided there. It'd be something that everyone would look forward to doing. And in some aspects, it still exists in certain places in the US and may well elsewhere too, Terry. But your Little Brown Jug, for example, is still run, you know, a famous race, is still run as part of what we would consider to be our show. At an arena that's at a almost a country type of a setup, which you're almost referencing what was happening at White City and some of those other tracks.
Yeah, exactly, and it was a form of entertainment. You know?
Well, even Oakbank today, you know, with the Ferris wheels and so on. That's as close as we get to the Little Brown Jug type look. Is basically Oakbank, isn't it? So,
Warrnambool. You know, jumping carnival. My grandfather used to go down there every year for that. You know, so it's the same type of thing. Everybody goes to it because it's an event.
And Terry, some of these greyhounds, we'll get back to greyhounds a little bit, that you've seen at some of these amazing racetracks and events, as we like to call them. You've seen Zoomtop, you've seen Tem Lee. They're greyhounds that I've just heard about and many of us just hear about now. And like Dan even suggested, they're almost like mythical creatures because we only ever see them on YouTube or hear about them. But you were fortunate enough back in the day to witness them in the flesh, weren't you?
Yeah, look, I've seen Zoomtop win the Association Cup at Harold Park when I was about 17, and beat Busy's Charm, and Busy's Charm was her sister. And as soon as the boxes went up, the crowd just roared, and the whole place was packed. They used to have people in on the flat then as well, you know, in the middle, on both sides, on the ledger, on the other side, and on the front straight side. It was just huge. And I was in the Association Cup and got beat by National Lass, who was just as good as Zoomtop. But Zoomtop was just a super dog. Yeah. So, and I've seen Tim Lee. He won. I've seen him win when he broke the track record. But Tim Lee and Brett Lee were just standout dogs. You know, like probably upset a lot of people by not mentioning, you know, other ones that are really good. But like they were just 8 to 10 lengths better than the other dogs on their night. So they're the sort of dogs that just, you know, burn into your mind. Yeah, so.
But, and as Simone says, they are mythical creatures because there's just grainy footage. If anyone can find a new photo of Farlap, it's instantly worth a fortune because it's something fresh. And a mate of mine had an artist, a painting at his house of the greats all standing in a paddock, but obviously from different eras, but he'd managed to have Farlap and Burnborough and Carbine all just sort of standing around with grass up to their ankles and things like that. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, wow, I think Carbine looks a little bit taller than Farlap. He's got a slightly different shoulder. And you do... They are mythical beasts, aren't they, these greats?
Exactly. Yeah. My dad's seen Farlap race because my grandfather was a rails bookmaker and Dad used to do the running for him. So he was at the races when Farlap was racing. So, yeah, he's seen him run. He's seen Chief Happy at Harold Park. So, you know, yeah, they're just, as you say, mythical characters. They become legends. But like Farlap, you've got to know about Farlap or Don Bradman or you're not Australian. Yeah.
That's it. And with Farlap, he is a legend, isn't he? You don't need to like or know anything about horse racing, but Farlap's just that one horse's name that pops up in conversations all the time, really, and in school books and things like that. And Terry, you mentioned Brett Lee, and he's a dog. I mean, I was very fortunate enough to watch him at all his big races and even just his heats and races around the place. But I remember the night at the Warrnambool Classic, and that was just probably one of the biggest nights of racing I've ever been to. And I know I've been to Melbourne Cups and Australian Cups, but that particular night in 2001 where he was the favourite, just that speed he had, and everyone came from the race course from that day to see Brett Lee. He just had this enigma about him, and he had a presence, and people might not have been interested or involved in greyhound racing, but it was one of those nights where we want to come and see one of the greatest. And if we could teleport, I'd love to go back to that night in 2001, only 20 years ago, but I just remember so vividly standing behind the boxes there with Andrew Bensley and just looking back at the crowd. And I think there's about 3,000 or 4,000 people crammed up onto the bank at Warrnambool. It was quite a spectacle.
Yeah, well, when he won the Australian Cup, the other trainers, you've interviewed them after the race, they're all just shell-shocked. We can't beat him, you know. Mm. And Teddy retired straight to stud after that. Yeah, so he was just unbeaten. And his time at Angle Park, 28.92 or something like that's the same as Tim Lee. Tim Lee broke the track record at Olympic Park. They were struggling to get to 30. 30 seconds was the track record. He ran 29.74. And he was dead and buried before the record was broken. And the same thing will happen at Angle Park. They won't break that record, and Brett Lee's gone. So they were just super dogs.
And, Terry, I was a kid, and I didn't see Tim Lee race, although apparently I was there once when he did race, would you believe, at Olympic Park, but I was too young to remember it. But what I do remember is that track record that he held for the best part of a decade. As I was growing up, the references that were made about this great dog, Tim Lee, and he had that track record for such a period of time. I think it was about 1984, so I was old enough then to appreciate it, and I had a grandfather train some dogs, and I had an uncle that trained some dogs, and the way that Tim Lee was regarded as both an athlete and then as a stud dog, even to this day, whether or not I was just so young and such an impressionable age, and we just talked about some great greyhounds moments ago, but I've never heard anyone else refer to this almost godlike, and I, you know, beyond an icon in the greyhound field. To 10 years to have that track record, and to be fair, he didn't just hold that. Nothing got near that record for 10 years.
No, the one Roy Shreese, one of his sons, ran I think 200 Southside, but that was, as you say, he was gone by then. So you know, he's just a superstar, just a superstar.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes you can reconnect to your own, you know, that mythical horse thing, because Dan and Simone will remember we've spoken about these great experiences that we've had before, and my first was Kingston Town's third Cox Plate, and, you know, he was one of those mythical creatures as well, you know, just attainable because he was in our lifetime. But I had Polaroids, took all these Polaroids on that day, and I found them about 6 months ago when we were scurrying through some stuff at my mum and dad's place, and I found these Polaroids of... The back mounting yard at Moonee Valley with underneath the big tree. And I have found these photos of Manicato and Rancher in Kingston Town that I took when I was a kid, just when they were walking around. And I found that strange. I felt like I was looking at a photo of Farlap. You know, it felt so far away. And But then I realised it was me who took the photo, and I thought, well, you know, I, did, I was part of the Kingston Town, you know, I stood next to Kingston Town, which only racing people understand the mythology of standing next to a quadruped and why it excites us, but that's what that was.
Yeah, it's always like that. You just appreciate the champions and remember them fondly.
Terry, just before we let you go, if you could get transported back in time, where do you think you'd like to go? Would it be a gallops, a harness, or a greyhound race? Who would you like to see?
Be a greyhound race. I would have loved to have seen Chief Happy run against the clock at Harold Park. Apparently, they set a race up with all lights at different points, which would be a track record over that distance. And you're in the 800 yards. And he broke each record as he went through the lights. So that would have been really something worth seeing. My dad was there when it happened, but, you can be told, but it's not the same as being there.
No, well, it's been great that you've actually been able to tell us about some of these things, because I didn't know about some of them, and I'm sure many of our listeners will be enlightened as well. And the fact you've had such a wealth of knowledge over so many decades with greyhounds in particular, but just general racing as well. It's been wonderful catching up. Terry, thanks for joining us on Cracking the Codes.
Right, thank you.
Good on you, Terry. And guys, even just in history as well as... you know, racing, as we're talking about. I remember when I was working temporarily as a hospital orderly at the Bacchus Marsh and District War Memorial Hospital, there was an old guy who was the grandfather of a girl I went to school with, and his name was Lionel Simpson, and I used to push him around in his wheelchair, and he used to talk to me about Gallipoli and how he, and it's a true legend, how when they all went over the bunker at Gallipoli when they were charging the Turks, that famous thing, a bullet got lodged in the butt of his gun when he was carrying it across his chest, and it saved his life. The fact that the gun, where the gun was positioned, took the bullet. And I remember thinking, you know, because our memory of Gallipoli is of grainy black and white photos of people who look like they were from 300 years ago and something that we can't relate to. And here's this guy pushing around who was telling me about going over the trench
over the top.
At Gallipoli. So, yeah, fascinating, isn't it?
It makes it a bit more real, doesn't it, when you've actually got someone describing their story, and rather than just reading about it, which we have to do these days, or just seeing, like you say, some grainy footage. And, of course, there's movies and things made to replicate it. But for someone to have that authenticity to be able to tell you, quite amazing. It makes you a little bit nostalgic, and also can make you a bit emotional, some of these types of things too.
Yes, well, some people do get a bit emotional, Simone, with these things. And I remember seeing some very grainy footage of Dan Malecki calling it Berwick and all those years ago when he was 13, you know, right back in the vault there, Dan.
I think it was even earlier than that, but yeah, you're right. It is, but I think it was actually in colour TV, at least at that stage. But what we need, though, is, you know, we refer to some of these animals, and some of them are during our lifetime, and footage is impossible to get. So we've mentioned it a couple of times. There's a few people that we know that upload some racing when they get a hold of it up onto YouTube, and it's so important, because the further we go on in life, the more difficult it seems to be in getting this footage. And we talk, you know, as we said, like a mythological creature, some of these champion animals of all codes. And in some cases, there is somewhere between very little and nothing as far as vision is concerned. It's not as if a lot of the time we're going back to the 1930s. You know, every now and then we pop up with a movie tone, audio visual. There might be a photograph here or there. But, you know, anyone that has got a family member, particularly if they're elder and maybe even past, the check out those cassette tapes and perhaps some of those videos. And, you know, there'll be rare gems somewhere, and it's really important to hold on to them.
There's an amazing series on at the moment. You know how they've been able to colourise the past. So there's this phenomenal, and they did it with World War II, and suddenly the grainy footage that looks like from 300 years ago, as soon as you colourise it, you can almost be there. And they did one about Australia's history, and it's been on SBS, and it's still going, I think, the final one. And it's the most mesmerising thing you've ever seen, because you know that grainy footage, Simone, you'll see of someone during the Great Depression wandering along a street in Surrey Hills in Sydney in the 1920s and kicking a can, and everyone, and beggars everywhere. As soon as you colourise it, you can suddenly go, wow, that really happened, because now I can sort of relate to it. And if you could do that with some of the old Farlap or whatever it is, it would kind of, because you know how, Dan, the filming of it is so sketchy that you can't even really see them in proper action. It'd be lovely to see footage of Farlap as it would be if we were watching it, you know, to see what his action actually looked like instead of that sort of sketchy sort of thing that you have to use your imagination a bit. But
No doubt. Yeah. Well, Burnborough, we had the Burnborough audio on a couple of weeks ago, and it detailed it in slow mode, his actual stride.
27-foot stride.
Yeah, it was quite extraordinary. And we need more of that sort of stuff, because these, as I always said, when I grew up, my heroes were horses. although I think Victoria Principal did get a Guernsey on the wall at one stage there. But otherwise, they were absolutely equine and canine, as they are for almost everyone that's involved in any of the three codes. Like those racetrack magazines, and they would have the centerfolds in there, Simone, but of course they were equine centerfolds.
That would appeal to me. I'd be more than happy to have that as a centerfold. I'd have them hanging
up on the
wall. They were
glossy. I've still got some around today, but they're so valuable to see these champion horses, particularly when I was growing up through the mid to late 70s. And I was still a little boy. I was a teenager when I turned 1980, I was 11. So, you know, that latter part through racetrack and those great horses that you would have at the time, if they weren't an old gun sin, they could have been a Tara's Bulba or maybe Mahal or Captain Teves and Desirable. All those sort of horses that had come through that period, and they were glossied in pictures. They actually were centerfolds, though, weren't they?
Yeah, well, they were. You had to sort of, you know, sneak them under your desk and all sorts of things. But us racing people are weirdo freaks because, and we all have horse heroes or dog heroes and things like that. But can you imagine a group of people sitting around and people saying, oh, who's your hero, Nathan? Well, it would be Dr. Stephen Hawking because I study the planets. And what about you, Mary? Well, it would be Abraham Lincoln because I'm interested in, you know, the United States. And what about you, Daniel and Simone? Well, I'd be Paleface Adios, miss, and I'd be Tim Lee. So we are complete freaks. There's no doubt about that. Hey, guys, that rounds off this another nice departure issue of Cracking the Codes today with a lot of audio and a lot of teletransportation fantasies from us. And we hope the listeners enjoyed it. Oakbank today, Sydney, everything else.
Easter egg semi-finals.
Easter eggs, yes.
Easter egg semi-finals, yep. Geelong Cup heats Monday night.
Are you withholding Easter eggs on Darcy? Has she been well-behaved enough to get an Easter egg?
Well, she has, but any parent would relate to this. So you buy the Easter eggs and you stash them. And then every now and again you go to that stash. And then when you remember that stash is always there, you keep going back and you have to keep replacing the eggs. Oh. Yeah, I was being organised having them done early, but I will have to replace some.
That's a given, yes. We thought that once you've rediscovered your own stash that you'd be making an impression on it. Good on you guys. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds good.
Look forward to it.